Hello, I'm Sebastian. Welcome to Nine Gnar Trees Podcast. Today, I will summarize and review the book, Capitalism in America, A History is a Nonfiction Economic History by Alan Greenspan and Adrian Wooldridge that surveys the development of the United States economy from the colonial era to the present. Written for a general audience, it combines historical narrative with economic interpretation to explain how American capitalism became so dynamic and so uneven. The book is built around a central idea: the United States has tended to prosper because it has been unusually tolerant of creative destruction, the process by which new industries, technologies, firms, and ideas replace older ones. Rather than treating capitalism as a fixed system, the authors present it as a changing historical force shaped by innovation, policy choices, institutions, and public attitudes. Their discussion moves through major turning points such as slavery, the New Deal, globalization, bubbles, regulation, and productivity slowdowns, showing how each affected the nation's economic trajectory. I will give you key takeaways from this book. Firstly, creative destruction as the book's core explanation for American growth. The book argues that the deepest reason for American economic dynamism is not a single policy or era, but the country's repeated willingness to let new forces displace old ones. Greenspan and Wooldridge use the Schumpeterian idea of creative destruction as the organizing lens for the entire history. In their view, American capitalism has been powerful because it allowed entrepreneurs, inventors, and new business models to challenge established interests. That process can be disruptive and painful, yet the authors treat it as the main engine behind productivity gains, rising living standards, and long-term national power. This framework also helps explain why the book does not present growth as smooth or inevitable. Progress emerges through conflict between innovation and incumbency, and through institutions that either encourage or restrain change. The authors repeatedly return to the problem of how the gains from innovation are distributed, noting that growth can become less democratic when the benefits of change are captured by a narrower group. This makes creative destruction both the book's explanation and its warning it creates wealth, but it also requires social and political management. Secondly, a sweeping history that links early American capitalism to the rise of national power. The book traces the American economy from its colonial beginnings through industrial expansion and modern financial capitalism, showing how scattered settlements became a world-leading economic system. Rather than focusing only on major business figures, the authors connect broader historical phases to the changing structure of markets, labor, transport, and finance. This long view lets them show that American capitalism was never merely about trade or wealth accumulation. It was also about building the conditions for scale, mobility, and innovation. The narrative emphasizes how the United States repeatedly transformed frontier limitations into advantages by attracting talent, mobilizing capital, and creating larger and more integrated markets. In this sense, the country's rise is presented as historically contingent rather than predetermined. The authors also suggest that the American system benefited from a pragmatic openness to experimentation, which made it easier for productive enterprises to emerge and expand. By framing capitalism as a national historical process, the book helps readers understand why American economic power cannot be explained only by abstract theory. It was built through institutions, infrastructure, migration, entrepreneurship, and changing public expectations over many generations. Thirdly, slavery, the New Deal, and globalization as tests of the American economic model. A major strength of the book is that it does not stop at praise for markets. It also tackles the most contentious episodes in U.S. economic history. The authors examine slavery in the antebellum South, the New Deal, and the country's shifting openness to global trade because each episode reveals tensions inside American capitalism. Slavery shows that economic development can coexist with profound moral failure and distorted incentives. The New Deal illustrates how government intervention can stabilize a damaged system while also reshaping the relationship between markets and the state. Global trade debates show that America has often swung between openness and protectionism, depending on political pressures and public anxiety about change. These chapters matter because they show capitalism as a contested system rather than an ideological slogan. The authors are interested in how the United States responded when growth was threatened, when inequality deepened, or when external competition intensified. Their treatment is more diagnostic than celebratory. They ask what each episode reveals about resilience, legitimacy, and institutional adaptation. As a result, the book becomes not just a history of prosperity, but a history of the choices that made prosperity possible and the compromises that came with it. Fourthly, innovation, productivity, and the uneven spread of prosperity. The book is especially concerned with the question of productivity growth, which the authors treat as the measurable sign of whether innovation is actually improving economic life. They ask where innovation comes from, how it spreads, and why its benefits sometimes reach ordinary Americans broadly, while in other periods they appear concentrated. This gives the book a distinctive analytical focus. It is not enough for new technologies or companies to appear. The real issue is whether they translate into durable gains across society. The authors connect this to historical shifts in education, business organization, competition, and labor markets. When innovation spreads widely, capitalism appears inclusive and socially transformative. When it does not, the economy can still generate wealth, but public trust weakens and resentment grows. This is why the book treats productivity slowdowns as more than technical economic problems. They are also political and cultural problems because they affect confidence in the future and the legitimacy of the system. By framing innovation as a social process rather than just a technological one, the authors give readers a way to think about why some eras of growth feel broad-based and others feel hollow, even when headline wealth remains high. Lastly, markets, regulation, and the social costs of change. The book does not argue for unfettered capitalism in a simplistic way. Instead, it repeatedly returns to the idea that those who bear the costs of economic change deserve protection, even if the authors still believe the United States has often accepted more pain for more gain than other countries. This makes regulation, policy, and social cushioning central to the book's practical relevance. The authors suggest that government can either support or hinder entrepreneurial energy, depending on how it is designed and how much it distorts incentives. They are attentive to bubbles, financial instability, and the risk that institutions meant to guide capitalism can instead weaken it. At the same time, they acknowledge that the system produces losers as well as winners, and that political backlash often follows when the burdens of change are ignored. This balance between market dynamism and social protection is one of the book's main analytical contributions. It helps readers see that capitalism's strength lies not in avoiding disruption, but in managing it better than rival systems. The result is a historically grounded argument for reform that preserves innovation while recognizing the human and institutional costs of constant economic transformation. In conclusion, this book will be most useful for readers who want a broad, readable history of American capitalism rather than a technical economics text. It is especially suited to general readers, students of economic history, business readers, and policy-minded audiences who want to understand how innovation, markets, and institutions have interacted across U.S. history. Its main value lies in the way it connects large historical episodes to a single explanatory theme, creative destruction, that gives the book a clear internal logic and makes it easier to see how slavery, industrialization, the New Deal, globalization, and modern productivity debates fit into one long economic story. Compared with many books in the same field, it stands out for its combination of institutional memory, policy perspective, and accessible narrative style. It is less specialized than an academic history and less ideological than a manifesto, even if it reflects a recognizable pro-market viewpoint. Readers looking for a balanced introduction to the big debates around American capitalism will find it useful not because it settles every question, but because it frames those questions clearly. It offers a strong starting point for thinking about how the United States became economically dominant and what pressures now threaten that position. If you would like to support Alan Greenspan, you can buy the book through the Amazon link I've provided in the podcast description. After reading the book, please let me know what you think and share your thoughts. See you around.